Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, and John Russell. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
During his visit to Asia, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said the U.S. is committed to freedom of navigation in the disputed waters in the South China Sea. But he ruled out a military response. Mattis said to reporters in Tokyo, "At this time, we do not see any need for dramatic military moves at all." Last December, China conducted takeoff and landing drills from its aircraft carrier Liaoning in the South China Sea, according to the state news agency Xinhua. The move followed a phone call between then-President-elect Donald Trump and the President of Taiwan. China has long considered Taiwan as a province of China. During his confirmation hearing, Rex Tillerson, the new U.S. Secretary of State, called China's island building an illegal activity. He said, "We're going to have to send China a clear signal that, first, the island building stops, and second, your access to those islands also is not going to be allowed." The comment drew sharp reaction from China. Liu Kang is a spokesman for China's foreign ministry. In his daily briefing on January 12th, he said that China has full right to conduct any kind of normal activities on its own territory within its sovereignty. The Global Times is a state-run news organization. It published a strongly worded editorial saying, "Unless Washington plans to wage a large-scale war in the South China Sea, any other approaches to prevent Chinese access to the islands will be foolish." Military experts say China's current military capabilities do not measure up to Beijing's tough rhetoric on its continuing activities in the South China Sea. Jeffrey Engstrom is a senior policy analyst at the RAND Corporation.
Certainly, things are more tense than they were just a few weeks ago, but I still don't think we're quite at the point of crisis, and certainly not at immediate confrontation.
Engstrom said China's Navy is not nearly as well-equipped as the United States. The Liaoning is the only aircraft carrier in the Chinese naval fleet. It was first built for the Soviet Navy and launched in Ukraine in 1988, but was never fully completed. It was upgraded and modernized for the People's Liberation Army Navy, which launched it in 2012. The Liaoning is smaller than U.S. aircraft carriers and cannot support as many aircraft. It also has a ski jump type of system for launching aircraft instead of a catapult system. This limits the size of aircraft that can be launched, as well as how many weapons can be loaded onto the aircraft. According to the U.S.-based research group, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS, the Liaoning can carry up to 24 fighter jets and about 12 helicopters. The U.S. Navy's current Nimitz-class warships can handle more than 60 aircraft. One of these is the USS Ronald Reagan, stationed in Japan. Since the Liaoning has only been fully operational for a few years, it also remains behind the U.S. Navy in experience and training. Denny Roy is a senior fellow at the Hawaii-based East-West Center. He says China is getting a lot of experience using the Liaoning while building its own new carrier fleet.
We understand that the Liaoning is primarily meant for training. Learning to operate an aircraft carrier takes many years. It's extremely complicated. So it's reasonable that the Chinese would start with sort of a practice carrier with the training wheels.
Roy added that China is thought to be currently working on additional, more advanced aircraft carriers.
We think that there are more Chinese carriers under construction that will be larger, more capable, and these are intended to actually be prepared to fight.
However, he added that even China's carriers currently under construction will not have the same capacity as the new U.S. supercarriers. The United States is currently building a new class of aircraft carriers known as the Gerald R. Ford class. These $13 billion supercarriers are even bigger than the Nimitz class. They can carry more than 4,500 people and at least 75 aircraft. The first of these, the USS Gerald Ford, is expected to be put into service in 2017. Jeffrey Engstrom says despite the Liaoning's limited capabilities, it serves as an important symbol of progress for China's Navy.
The symbolism is that China is a great power. Great powers have aircraft carriers, and China, too, has an aircraft carrier.
I'm Brian Lynn.
The Syrian government has created an all-female military unit in a mostly Kurdish city in the northeastern part of the country. It is the same city in which American-led Kurdish forces have been fighting Islamic State militants. Jezia Sheikh Ali is a leader of the ruling Ba'ath Party. He told the pro-Syrian Lebanese Al Jadid TV that the unit will be made up of volunteers. It will have no minimum age requirement. He said at least 150 women have been recruited for the unit. He said they will receive, in his words, intensive training on how to use small weapons and guard checkpoints. A Kurdish activist in the city posted a Facebook video of the military unit. The video shows women in Syrian military clothing training near Kamishli. the largest Kurdish city in Syria. Since the Syrian civil war began in 2011, the government has kept only a small number of troops in the Kurdish region. In 2012, Syrian troops withdrew from most of the cities and towns in the north and northeastern part of the country. That is because they were needed to fight rebels in other parts of the country. A small group of Syrian troops was based outside Qamishli. They let Kurds control the city. But last summer, the Kurds tried to increase the territory they controlled. The Syrian troops stopped the Kurds from doing so. The fighting between the two groups has ended, but the tension between them remains. The members of the new all-female military unit are ethnic Arabs. Local observers say they could worsen ethnic tensions. The women are being used to strengthen the Syrian Arab army. Fighting the rebels and the Islamic State terrorist group in other parts of Syria has weakened the army. Diluan Cheto is a political expert in Qamishli. He told VOA that the all-female unit was formed because, in his words, the Syrian government wants to send a message to the local Kurdish administration that they are willing to come back to this area. Cheto said the Syrian military is suffering from a severe shortage of male soldiers. He said the Syrian government believes women can help strengthen the army. Cheto said Syrian forces appear ready to try to reestablish control in the Kurdish region after driving rebels from Aleppo, about 400 kilometers to the west. Kurdish units headquartered in Qamishli are known as People Protection Units, or YPG. These units have helped the U.S.-led coalition fight Islamic State militants south of the city. They appear to be in control of Qamishli. Ekrem Salih reports on military activities in the area. He called the all-female unit propaganda material. I don't think this will change anything as far as local military dynamics, he told VOA. YPG doesn't accept any military competitor on the ground. Therefore, this unit won't achieve any goals for the regime. YPG officials would not talk to VOA about the female unit. The YPG has its own all-female unit called the YPJ. It has joined in combat against Islamic State fighters. I'm Katie Weaver.
The smuggling of minerals continues to supply millions of dollars to armed groups in Afghanistan, said an anti-corruption group this week. The Afghanistan Anti-Corruption Network said in a report that militant groups received at least $46 million by illegally exporting minerals and precious stones to Pakistan. The report said up to 750,000 tons of marble and talc were smuggled from various parts of Nangarhar province. Some areas of this province have active Taliban and Islamic State fighters. Marble is a kind of stone that is often polished and used in buildings and statues. Talc is used in the manufacturing of products, including plastics, paints, and cosmetics. Zemin Khan Amarkhel is the president of the Anti-Corruption Network. He told Radio Liberty's Afghanistan service that every day, 500 trucks carrying stones pass through government-controlled roads and arrive in Pakistan. Each truck, he added, carries about 45 tons of stone. From there, he says, the stones are sent to European countries. The Afghan Mines Ministry says the government has banned mineral exports to Pakistan. It says it has also encouraged local businesses to invest in the sector and legally export processed material to foreign countries. Pakistan is not the only destination for smuggled minerals. The Anti-Corruption Network says precious stones are being illegally mined from at least 2,000 mines in Afghanistan's northeast. These stones travel across Afghanistan's border with China. Zabiullah Wardak, a member of the anti-corruption group, said that last year, $300 million worth of precious stones were smuggled from the province to China. The Afghan government says fighting between Afghan forces and militant groups has led to an increase in illegal mining. Experts say the mineral smuggling occurs through a strong network of militants, criminal groups, and some civil servants and military officials. Harun Rashid Sherzad is a civil society activist and former deputy minister of anti-narcotics. He told VOA that mineral smuggling is a huge business for the involved parties who are thriving under weak government surveillance. Afghanistan has a long history of smuggling. In the early 1970s, as much as 20 to 25% of Afghanistan's foreign trade came from smuggling. This information comes from a paper written by Jagdish Bhagwati and Bent Hansen in 1971. A report from West Point's Counterterrorism Center says small-scale mining and drug smuggling played an important role in financing conflicts throughout the 1990s and 2000s. Despite Afghanistan's wealth in minerals, the country has had a difficult time developing significant industries in some parts of the country. A 2010 report in the New York Times says Afghanistan may have over $1 trillion worth of mineral reserves. The ongoing insurgency and instability in the province has not allowed businesses to establish factories, an official at the Ministry of Mines told VOA. The official did not want to be identified. Experts say that continued smuggling and border corruption are not only fueling conflict, but costing Afghanistan millions of dollars. Customs revenue collections have increased in the past year, says the country's finance ministry. However, the country still loses large amounts of tax revenues due to smuggling. Surveillance is weak at the borders. An individual with a license to export 100 tons of stones would be able to export 1,000 tons instead, Sherzad, the civil society activist, said. Corrupt officials turn a blind eye to illegal exports and, in return, they too benefit from it. I'm John Russell.
This is what's trending today. The New England Patriots football team defeated the Atlanta Falcons in the 51st Super Bowl on Sunday. It was the Patriots' fifth Super Bowl win. It was also the first ever Super Bowl game to go into overtime. At one point, the Patriots were losing to the Falcons 28-3. The game seemed over, but the Patriots came back to win in overtime 34-28. Running back James White dove over the goal line to score the winning touchdown. Names from this year's Super Bowl took over Twitter and Facebook in the United States from Sunday evening into Monday. New England quarterback Tom Brady was named the game's most valuable player. He became the first quarterback in the National Football League to win 5 Super Bowls. One writer said he played the best Super Bowl game ever. The Falcons looked so good in the first half of the game that many people turned away from the game itself. That set the stage for the halftime show. Lady Gaga's 13-minute show got better ratings than the game did. Lady Gaga wore a beaded silver costume, including high-heeled silver boots. She had sparkling makeup around her eyes. She was lowered onto the stage with wires from high above the stadium. She performed 7 of her popular songs, including Poker Face, Bad Romance, Just Dance, and Born This Way. She was joined on stage by many dancers, but no guest performers. After the game, Lady Gaga announced her plans for a series of performances around the world. The tour starts in Canada on August 1st and takes her to the United States, Brazil, Switzerland, England, Spain, Sweden, and several other countries. One expert said it was the 4th straight year that more people watched the halftime show than the football game itself. Television commercials also trended on social media. One of the most talked about commercials came from the building supply company 84 Lumber. That advertisement showed a mother and daughter walking through the desert towards the United States, only to be stopped at the border by a wall. They believe their trip is over, but find a door that lets them through. The commercial ends with the words, "The will to succeed is always welcome here." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. In the future, chemicals from plants found in and around the Mediterranean may be used to help treat people with brain diseases, such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. These two diseases are age-related and neurodegenerative. Neurodegenerative relates to the degeneration of nervous tissue, especially the brain. People suffering from Alzheimer's and Parkinson's have deposits of sticky plaque in their brains. Over time, this plaque reduces brain function. Eventually, it causes death. But scientists say the plaque deposits can be reduced with chemicals from plants, including prickly pear and brown seaweed. The scientists say the chemicals or extracts appear to replace the harmful sticky plaque with deposits that are less harmful. These scientists are researchers at the University of Malta and the National Center of Scientific Research at the University of Bordeaux. They tested the chemical extracts of the plants on a substance called brewer's yeast. This yeast had plaque deposits similar to those seen in Alzheimer's disease. Scientists say the health of the yeast improved greatly after exposure to the chemical extracts. Researchers then tested the extracts in fruit flies that were genetically changed to develop symptoms of Alzheimer's. They found that when the flies were given brown seaweed extract, their lifespans increased by 2 days. Prickly pear helped the insects live 4 days longer. That may not sound like a long time. However, the researchers remind us that 1 day in the life of a fruit fly is equal to 1 human year. Researchers also noted that movement in some of the diseased insects improved. They reported their findings in the journal Neuroscience Letters. Researchers say that the sticky plaques in both Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases appear to form through the same biological pathways. Targeting these pathways, they say, is the best way to fight the diseases. The lead author of the study is Ruben Cauchi of the University of Malta's Center for Molecular Medicine and Biobanking. He says the Mediterranean plant extracts are already used in health foods and some cosmetics, so they are very safe. The research team is working with a company that extracts the chemicals for commercial use as so-called Fountain of Youth products. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.